Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to the Transformation Zone. I'm your host, Velton Schall, and it's Thursday night, and the clock on the wall says 6:30 p.m., and you have tuned in to the right place, because for the next 30 minutes, we are going to take some time and devote some energy to talking about a topic and topics that are very important to each and every one of us. And I'm excited tonight because I have the opportunity to have another guest who is a prominent expert and leader in the area of leadership. Because, you know, prior to the show, he and I were talking, and we'll talk a little bit more about it as we get into it, is there's a distinct difference between being a boss and a leader. And we want to make sure that in this day and age, as we move forward, we have no misunderstanding about the objective of a leader versus the saddling of being a boss. And I'm very fortunate this evening because I have a gentleman that I met a few months ago. His name is Michael Kublin, and Michael is the founder and president of a company called PeopleTech. And PeopleTech works with corporate executives, their team members, organizations to help them through this leadership issue and helps them develop their potential, their full potential, to achieve results that no one inside the organization really understood was possible as an individual, but under the right leadership and the right teamwork and the right ideology, they can do incredible things. And I'm so excited because Mike has given us 30 minutes out of his busy schedule to come and talk to us and just give us some of his ideas and foresight. You know, it's amazing because I was doing some homework on Michael and reading his bio, and one of the things that stood out to me was the fact that he's written multiple books on the topic of leadership. The first book he had written was called 12 Steps for Courageous Leadership. Amazing title. The second book, Leadership Journey, number one, Driving Results Through Self-Discovery. We're going to talk a little bit about that with Michael. And the third book, Leadership Journey, number two, Moving Beyond the Barriers. But I'm not going to take too much of the time talking about Mike. I want to talk to Mike, and I want to invite him to really come on and give us some of his background, some of his information, some of his knowledge. Mike, how you doing tonight?
Oh, Velton, thank you so much for that introduction. I really, really appreciate it, and thank you for having me on the show, and thank you, everybody, that's participating with your energy, effort, and emotion. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you, Mike. It's an honor and a pleasure for us to have people like yourself that take time out of their busy schedules. We know you travel all over the country talking and teaching and training and mentoring. So let's get into a little bit about Mike Kublin, because the audience really doesn't know you. Now, I understand, Mike, that like a lot of us, getting into doing what you're doing right now is not where we started. And I know when I met you, you were telling me that you worked in the IT area for quite some time. Can you tell
exactly
us a little bit about your transition from that to what you're doing now?
Sure, Velton. Let me share that story. I grew up in Florida, went to University of Florida for those Gators out there, and then after college, I went to work for EDS, Ross Perot's company, out in Texas, and then I came back to South Florida and ended up working for a large financial institution. And I got some feedback. I was leading a team of about 120 to 130 people or so, and I got some feedback in the IT world that I was a visionary, I was motivating, I was inspiring, I was really, really good with customer relationships and where to take them. However, I was also got some feedback that I was wishy-washy, and I didn't hold people accountable to behavior. So that kind of punched me hard. It kind of hit me like, oh my God. So I didn't even believe it really at first until I went out with the head of human resources. We went out for bagels. Don't ever go out for bagels with a human resources person. It's not a good thing. Anyway, so he told me that he says, Mike, you really got to deal with this thing. You want to move up in the organization. You want to be a vice president, senior VP, and you want to move up. So you know you need to work on this. So I said, well, what do I do? And he really didn't know what to do at that time. You know, that was back in the 80s when I got this feedback, and he didn't really know what to do. So I ended up searching around, and I found a consultant. She specialized working with doctors and nurses in hospitals, helping them to be better team members with each other, because you know sometimes particularly in the operating rooms and particularly around the hospitals, some of the people can have an edge with each other and didn't know where that was coming from. So she was helping them. She had a PhD in leadership, and I said, can you take those concepts and help me here with my IT department? She worked with me for a period of about a year, and we were able to turn our survey results, our department survey, from one of the worst in the technology department to one of the best. And it was really by me looking at my behavior, because she showed me where my behavior was creating the impressions to everyone else that was out there. And so, you know, by me opening up and becoming vulnerable with the team in terms of learning what were my strengths, what were my weaknesses, and also becoming really, really clear on our vision and then holding people accountable, you know, our team began to have open dialogue around when was I doing it, when was I not. And I was also able to help all of them become more open with their strengths and weaknesses as well. So I got into it. I started to love all of the things that we were doing, and I started to get certified in various tools and various leadership instruments, started to read various books. I was transferred out to Arizona, and I decided this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. Quickly jumped out of corporate America and started People Tech. And the goal was going to be working with people in technologies, but a very, very, very good friend of mine said to me, Mike, don't make it a TECH, make it a TEK, because you're going to be working with people all over, and they're not only going to be IT people. And that was the smartest, best move that ever happened, because even though we do work a lot with engineers and a lot with IT professionals, programmers, and operations project managers, even though we do work very heavy in the IT space, we're also in many other industries and, you know, with many other leaders of all levels and all different titles. And so that was a great thing to make it a TEK, and been running People Tech since 1996, and have a team of great coaches. And we work with leaders, teams, and entire organizations now, really working on the same things that I was struggling with, because I haven't met a person on the planet yet that doesn't have strengths. And if you overuse those strengths and they get in your way, they end up becoming an Achilles heel and derailing you. The issue is, do you know what they are, and do you know how to overcome them?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So hope that wasn't too long-winded.
No, not at all. Now, you know, one of the things about being successful is being passionate about what you do and how
yeah.
you do it. You know, you just mentioned something about people having strengths and utilizing their strengths. And a lot of times their strengths come from that area inside of their makeup that is where their passion comes from. But
exactly.
On the other side of this, you know, you talked about if you overindulge, it's no longer a strength. I like to call it, I don't like the word weakness, and I try not to use the word weakness when I'm talking to people. I call it their area of opportunity.
I love that. So, yeah, at People Tech, we call it how do you identify what your magic dust is? Because if you look at a person, and a lot of people are on a quest to find out what it is, but that's the skills, abilities, talents that you would have, and no matter where you would go, they would come so easy to you. They come so easy, and you're thinking, why don't other people, why can't they do it? But sometimes we don't recognize what that is. And to your point, if you overuse that magic dust, what we call the skill, ability, and talent that comes so easy, if you overuse it, you use it so much that it gets in your way, because you don't need to maybe overpower people with it. You just use it so much that it ends up getting in your way and becoming a problem to you. And so what we like to do is help people identify their skills, abilities, and talents that they would use everywhere, and how do they apply those, and then what's the thing that holds them back the most. And generally what it is overuse of that magic dust.
So if you encounter somebody like that, and we've all had bosses that have been absolutely on the level of a genius. And
yes.
Unfortunately, when you have that kind of genius, one of the things that gets squeezed out, because you got so much genius and especially that magic dust inside of you, is
yes.
P word, which is patience.
Yes. Yes.
How do you work with a person that is a genius and help them, coach them, coerce them to develop that skill, that necessary skill called patience? And I'm going to follow this up because we had a preliminary conversation about my guest from last week who works with millennials, and, you know, they look for patience in their leadership, but unfortunately they don't, that's not one of their strengths.
Well, not with all of them. Yeah, I hear you. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that. You know, like I had mentioned, I haven't met a person yet on the planet that doesn't have this magic dust and at the same time doesn't have this Achilles heel. A lot of times people that are, you know, obviously very, very bright, like you're saying, very, very on their game in terms of intellect, strategy, really can very, very sharp in terms of how they apply their skills and abilities. Sometimes they overuse that thinking and that logic and end up becoming very dominant, directive, and very pushy, where it isn't empowering other people to really be able to play their role. So people get kind of afraid of them. They don't really maybe share all the information that they could share. So there ends up being some trust issues on the team, or maybe people don't grow and develop. So then they're wondering, why don't I have a succession plan? Why don't people step up to the game? But really, because they're so, you know, always solving everything, and they're really, really bright and really, really controlling in that way, that they end up, to your point, overpowering the situation. And what happens generally to answer your question is, a person that falls into that sometimes either gets feedback from peers, feedback from a partner, a spouse, a close friend, a colleague, and that feedback is happening in multiple areas of their life. So it's not kind of like a surprise that they all of a sudden need to work in these things. The most aware leaders know that they have something that they need to work on. They may not know 100% what it is. We just actually had a group of 12 really, really brilliant people. I would say every one of them is sharp senior vice president and really, really on their game. And, you know, their blind spot was really how were they coming across, how were they coaching, developing, and helping others. They were feeling everything was falling on them, that they had to do everything. And they were wondering, why weren't people stepping up to the game? Well, it was really because of their behavior. And so now that they're free, they actually feel a lot better. They didn't know what they didn't know. To your point, I don't think it comes to any surprise. The only people that can be helped are the people that want to be helped and the people that want to make a change. And what I got to say about this particular group is that several of the people, including the CEO, wanted to have this shift because he knew time was wasting in terms of developing the levels that needed to be developed and expand the company significantly. And if time is wasting because of people talking behind each other's backs or not being upfront with each other enough or just being frustrated because they couldn't have a direct conversation with the type of behavior that they were needing, well, they were creating their own world, and it was costing them not to be able to expand to the level that they can expand and grow and innovate. So every minute that was wasting with the way they were dealing with it was a minute really that was lost in terms of productivity and lost in terms of what could be invested with more time with the customers, more time in sales, more time building processes. They were burning up a lot of time. And now, a few months of working together, they've totally transformed. It's been about 6 months, but they've totally transformed their behavior. And I would say that these guys are all on a genius level. So, that's the thing. The difference is the secret for them is they wanted to be better. And not everybody did, but at least the CEO and a couple of the key people wanted it. And because of that, all the others came along and everybody benefited.
Wow, that's fantastic. So when you're working with an organization like that, you know, obviously we talked about this a little earlier. We've got a cross section now. When I was talking to Amanda, I think she said that millennials or the millennials, they make up over 40% of our current workforce.
Yeah, that's true. I had heard it was over 25. Yeah, up as high as 40 now, and it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be rapidly growing, and a lot of people don't realize that the millennials are really leading the country and the world now.
Well, you know, and it's interesting because one of the things we talked about is that need for leaders to adopt or have a certain level of understanding and patience. And what happens is this is a generation that grew up with cellular phones and laptops and iPhones or droids, and they're really used to immediate personal gratification, yet and still – when it comes to being led, they are looking for you to have flexibility and patience with them. How do you lay that kind of a thought process to someone, I'm going to take some liberties here, like me who's on the verge of being considered ancient?
Right. No, I am. I'm as well. Well, one of the things that millennials also crave, and that's something we found recently, is they crave to be coached. And coaching is different than telling. So the way that you model for them behavior such that you're listening and asking questions and discussing with each other, you're not directing. So you're really empowering with them with their life and their career. And if they really believe that you're empowering them to go where they've never gone before, then they're going to really respond well to you because they're not being told what to do. They're being empowered to make decisions, to make things happen, to make things right. So what will happen is it creates a dialogue where you ask questions, you talk, you listen. You're really more of a coach or a mentor. You're not a top-down, telling people this is the way you're going to do it and this is how it's always been done and we've been doing it like this. That's really not what a millennial wants to hear. They really want to hear about innovation, about how to make something better. Let's face it, we all know we've all waited on a customer service call for minutes and minutes and minutes. We've all had good customer service. We've all had bad. So we know processes need to be worked on. Well, a millennial likes to be empowered to make change happen. They like to be empowered for their career. While they want immediate, if you listen, you talk, and you coach rather than tell, I think it goes a long way with them. They also eat up the self-reflection, and it's really interesting. We do a lot of self-reflective tools because that's the process that we like. At first, you know, they come in a little bit skeptical when they come to through our process, the leadership journey. But after a while, they say, you know what, this is something for me for my whole life. Because, again, their relationships have already given them the feedback and the information that they need that they may need to work in that arena. And so it's not like it's a total surprise. So they're, you know, they're starting to peel back the onion themselves. So it's, again, it's coaching. It's not telling. It's more experiential rather than go do this, go do that, and be being told what to do.
You know, it's amazing. Steve Jobs, I think, did it better than anybody. He said, we don't hire brilliant people to tell them what to do. We hire brilliant people to tell us how to get it done.
Exactly. I love that. I love that quote. And I love that book, too. Walter Isaacson. Great, great book.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, I guess the question that we all want to know is, what makes the best leader? What separates a good leader from a great leader? You know, I just read a book called Going from Good to Great, and I really think that it's a book that I would recommend to a lot of people just because of the fact that it talks about the difference between good and great. And one of the things that I'll never forget as I was reading it, it says, the biggest problem with people becoming great is they become satisfied with being good.
That's such a great statement. I love that. I'm writing it down as we talk because
Okay.
I think that's the philosophy about what's good and what's great.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I had been chatting about this a little bit. The best leaders are the people that are first of all. I always have to think visionary is very, very critical. Because you know, having a vision and then empowering everybody to craft the vision and to help make it come to a reality is, and I don't mean just a vision on paper. I mean something that's emotionally charged, something that's meaningful, that has meaning long. It's very personal. It's almost impossible, and it lives on. And then the alignment, the execution and the alignment to that vision are also what the best leaders are good at. They're great at the communication skills and things that they need to align behavior and processes. And then the carrying out, the executing, you know, the greatest leaders are able to mobilize a whole force of people to create other leaders. So they're not doing a job or a task or acting as a technician. People that are really good at doing a job or a task are afraid to let go and then let other people do that job or task, and they're afraid to become leader of leaders. And the best leaders are leaders of other leaders. They replicate what they have done and create multiples of fabulous, empowered leaders that are changing the planet. And the key ingredient is continual leadership learning. That it's never done. It's to your point. You said that once, you know, they become good, you know, they're satisfied with good, so they don't get to the great, right? Well, the greatest leaders are never satisfied. It's like physical exercise. How many in the audience do physical exercise? If I was to ask how many people do dumbbells and kettlebell swings and climb ropes or jump boxes or whatever they're doing, running. The issue is you cannot do it once and then all of a sudden your muscles are developed. Well, leadership development is the same way. You can't read one book by an expert or you can't do one class. It's all of your life. How you make decisions,
right.
How you handle conflict, how you handle change, how you communicate, how you build a team, how you build trust, how you give and receive feedback in a healthy, honoring, respectful way. These skills don't just happen in a minute. They're a lifelong process of learning, and they never, ever stop. So, you know, I always look at somebody and say, oh, well, this is the way we've done it, and this is the way I'm going to do it. Yeah, there's some truth to a template that's franchisable, but if they're not continually learning and upping their skills, then really I wouldn't put them in the category of great or maybe not even as good.
Well, you know, it's amazing. I've heard it said by some brilliant people. You're never too old to learn, and you're never too young to teach.
I love that.
And one of the
Belton,
things that you talked about is continual learning. And you know, it's a theme, a common theme that you talk about a lot. What do you mean by that?
And I know what I mean by that is, well, let me state what it is. It's there's a book by Carol Dweck called A Growth Mindset. I don't know, Velton, if you've read that or not, or if the audience has read
it.
No,
I haven't.
Well, the basic gist of the book, she studied mindsets for around 30 years, and what she found, even with kids, that people that have either a fixed or a growth mindset, and a fixed mindset person is someone that will blame someone else because they don't get it, or they will stay doing the easiest thing possible because they don't want to stretch themselves into an uncomfort zone. Now, we probably all wave in and out, but the key is to be aware and to recognize that how do we become a growth-mindsetted person? What they found, even with kids, that the kids that handled the most tough puzzles and were not afraid to fail, and the ones that took the easiest puzzles were the fixed-mindsetted, the ones that took the toughest puzzles were the growth-mindsetted. So what it is continual learning is always stretching yourself into the toughest possible situation you can be in order to achieve your vision, in order to grow as a person. So that means once you get comfortable and that once everything's feeling great, well, you're not pushing yourself out. You haven't taken yourself beyond. You haven't empowered yourself to go where you've never gone before. So there's something else that you're going to attain and that you can attain, and it's your duty to do it if you really want to be a great leader and really want to have a growth mindset. Well, that's what continual learning is. It's empowering yourself to go where you've never gone before and continuing to do that in these areas of leadership, how you communicate with people, how you handle conflict with people, how you carry out a vision, how you motivate, inspire other people, how you leave a good impact on anything that you're doing and become better and better and better at it every day. I hope
you
that
know, it's,
helps.
That's amazing. I love that information. It's refreshing because there are so many aspects to leadership. And one of the things I wanted to touch on as you continue in that vein is you talked about having a vision. You know, and like I told you, I'm writing a book, and one of the chapters in the book is entitled "Have a Vision, Not a Task List."
Awesome.
We have this vision that we relay to the people around us. It's full of, obviously, you have to fix goals to the vision, you have to fix tasks to the vision, but at some point, as a leader, you may not be intricately involved, but you have to be able to oversee what's going on and have some kind of tracking mechanism to let you know whether your vision is being fulfilled or if you're off track. Why do you need that? How do you assure something like that is taking place?
Yeah, and it's really a critical. I look at it as a formula. V comma M comma G comma M equals B. Okay, and so vision, mission, goals, and measures equal behavior. So the way I look to see that the vision is happening is, do you have the right measurements in place to make sure your vision is becoming a reality? Sometimes we have measures in place that may not be holding you accountable towards that vision. It actually might be holding you accountable to other things, but maybe not the vision. And so you've got to continually look at your measures of accountability and your feedback loops around these measurements, because, you know, people are afraid of measures. And in the sales world, well, salespeople get measured all the time. The issue is, are they breaking down all the tasks to get measured all the time? They probably are, because they're in the business world, they're probably the most measured people we have. Managers, project managers, all the rest of the world, engineers, you know, we kind of get a buy because not everything is measured all the time. Sports people measure every single thing that happens, and they are measured six ways to Sunday in sports. Well, in the business world, for some reason, we tend to shy away from really looking at accountability around measurements because we're afraid of it, what it might tell us. And really, they're really good at telling us whether or not we're making it or not making it. Doesn't mean we got to stop, but we might need to tweak something, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. So, Michael, if someone needed to or was interested in getting in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, there's a couple of ways. They can actually reach me through my email at mkublin, K-U-B-L-I-N, at peopletech, P-E-O-P-L-E-T-E-K, coaching, C-O-A-C-H-I-N-G.com, or they can feel free to reach out to me on my phone. I'll 954-336-7553. That's actually my cell, or they could call PeopleTech at 888-565-9555.
Great. Well, Michael, I want to say thanks very much for being our guest this evening. It's been a pleasure having you. I hope in 2017 at some point you'll make time to come back and visit with us again and give us some more insight into your world and what's going on from the leadership perspective. And
thank you, Velton. Thank you for having me, and it was a pleasure. And I hope I didn't over-talk too much, but I was really glad to be on part of the show, and I look forward to definitely doing it later in the year again, for sure. And you and I will chat for sure again.
Absolutely. Very good. Thanks again. Well, folks, Talk on the Wall says our time is gone, but you know what? We have so much fun here, and we try to do so many things for so many people. We don't always end when we're supposed to end. So with that said, I'm going to sign off for the evening and invite you to come back and see us again soon. I'm Velton Schall. This is Transformation Zone. Remember, the going from good to great is a marathon. It's not a sprint. But only you can transform your thinking. And if you do, you'll transform your world. Good night.